Mini episode 1928 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1928. You have with you here today FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Russ Cohen, and we are here to preview the 2026 Stanley Cup Final singular here on the FDH Lounge.
Correct.
A couple weeks ago, we did the Stanley Cup playoffs preview, and neither of us is going to be accurate as far as the teams that we had picked to make it to this point. And it's going to be Carolina and Vegas. And it's one of these things where I do think that this is something, and you may not enjoy hearing this, Russ Cohen, but given that, and again, the point of comparison is particularly stark in as much as just like the NBA, it all runs on ABC. So it's every night it's going to be one of the two going basically back to back here. And you look at everything from the star power on down with the intrigue with the NBA one this year versus this one here. I mean, it's a thing where, and I've said this before about Vegas, like, I mean, they're a very, very, very good team. And they have some high-end star power, but I've remarked before that, like, a team in the world's most glamorous city that has the sort of air of, like, beige wallpaper, they're efficient. They're super efficient. They're not often that exciting. Exciting is not really a word that we would apply to Carolina either. Montreal, had they made it there, I think that would have been intrigue. I mean, you're not only looking at getting the monkey off the back for Canada, but this young Canadiens team with all of the young star power, and can they, you know, congeal and get it done a little bit before their time? Ironically, kind of like San Antonio is doing in the NBA. This would be a little less dramatic than that, a little bit less, but still, like, that would have been something. And I really did think Montreal was going to get past Carolina. I was wrong. And this is a thing where I will say also, too, I think it's sort of exhibit A when I say, hey, NHL, why don't you go back to the conference quarterfinals, you know, like 1 through 8, whatever. Like,
don't start this.
The path that these teams took out of the two divisions.
I get it, but it's only now. It's just, yes, there's no question Colorado would be there if they didn't play Minnesota because it took a lot of starch out of them. It gave them a lot of injuries.
It was a 5-game series, though, but still, yeah.
But it still did. But because, again, you didn't have McKinnon healthy and McCarr was hurt for the first two.
Yep.
But again, if 5 years in the future, it may be completely different and upside down. So by the time they change it, let's say they change it in 3-4 years, it may not mean the same thing because the teams will be different. So I don't buy into it.
It is a thing where, again, the whole notion of, like, and I'm not saying that what Carolina has done is unimpressive, but like, OMG, they swept the first two rounds. That was historical. I'm like, it was Ottawa and, no offense, Philadelphia.
No, I get it. It wasn't
historic. Can we slow the roll a little bit here?
Yeah. It was not historic.
Well, and like, and the same thing too, like with Vegas, they kind of, you know, unlike my Cleveland Cavaliers, they got away with playing with their food, which they did, let's be honest, against Utah and Anaheim. Utah, an up-and-coming team, but inexperienced. Anaheim, and we'll look at our advanced statistics here in a moment. Anaheim, one of the key what the hell are they doing here teams in this year's playoffs.
They had Quenneville. He pushed the right buttons for a little while. I think it helped. And, you know, some of those vets that they got in previous years pushed them to, and, you know, Cutter Gauthier had a tremendous year. Like, they had some reasons to be there.
But it still is a thing where, again, in looking at it, one of the, because, again, you know, the picks that I was making going throughout the playoffs on Twitter, I had, as did a lot of people, Colorado going past Vegas. Now, again, I think a lot of us at the outset probably didn't know the degree to which the injuries were really going to be.
No, I had no idea.
and would have made the other pick had I known that, clearly. But it's a thing where even with the injuries, like that sweep is that, I mean, I almost sort of go back to like, what was it, 2018 or whenever it was with Columbus and Tampa Bay. Like there yes. are there are sweeps that happen that just blow your mind.
Oh, yeah.
And even with the injuries, I'm still like, how the hell did that happen? It's almost unfathomable to me.
Like I said, it was like players were rotated in and out based on who's healthy, who's not. And like I said, McKinnon wasn't healthy the whole time, and he couldn't even play more than the power play the last couple of games. So I see why it happened.
Sure, yeah. But just watching it play out as it did.
I mean, I'm 9-for-14 in the Sirius XM pool, and that's not bad.
Okay. And I don't remember off the top of my head where I'm at. I'm somewhere in that ballpark. I'm not doing that great. But
I'm like 4 from the top points wise. So I still have a chance.
Right. But it's like, I mean,
and there's no money on this pool. This is just for fun.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, part of it is too, like, even on the ones that I'm getting right, like I had Carolina in the conference finals, but it's like, do I deserve any credit for that? Look at that freaking division.
We all picked them.
Yeah.
We don't get credit for that. Really.
We should not get. Yeah. Don't give me any credit for saying Carolina would get that far. And again, I believe it was Tampa Bay over Colorado in the final. And you did warn me ahead of time that Hedman might not play,
What was doing it for me, like, because I saw what Cooper was doing, the job he was doing and Kucherov was doing, and to kind of keep it going. But then once I knew he probably wasn't going to play, that was it for me.
Yeah. And I think ultimately, I thought it was very, very, very close between them and Montreal in the first round. And if you would have told me ahead of time, Rick, he's not going to play, guaranteed, I would have picked Montreal.
I think I still picked Tampa. But I was getting that feeling midway in, like we're never going to see him. I didn't know that for sure before to clear that up.
And when you look at the next round with Montreal and with Buffalo, and that's a thing where, again, I'm gonna bring up here as far as our some are advanced statistics, some are regular statistics, but our 2025-2026 FDH NHL end of regular season breakdown available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com. And when you look at it here with Buffalo. And again, they did place in a tie for fourth in the final one here. But going along and like looking at their team statistics and some of the ones individually, it did strike me, and this is why I picked Montreal over them, that like they're a team that was on an incredible heater in the second half of the year. But I didn't really see as much substantive beyond that. The notion that like, OMG, they've broken through.
They might be able to with their defense. But then the whole year I was worried about their goaltending. But I kind of went aboard. And then, of course, their goaltending blew up. So there you go.
Yeah. And when you look at this with both of these teams here in the final, goaltending during the year, radically different than what it is now, which accounts for part of why they placed where they did. Carolina, of course, and for anybody checking the video version of the show, you'll get to see this as we're discussing it. Carolina tied for fourth on our metric. Vegas was 11th for the regular season numbers, and it is a combination of all of the following metrics. So Carolina, they were third on the final FDH power rankings for the season. Vegas was 12th. Looking at the SRS from Hockey Reference, Carolina 3rd, Vegas 15th. Power play percentage, Carolina 5th, Vegas 6th.
I mean, Vegas was a bad regular team before John Tortorella showed up. They weren't bad, but they were underperforming.
Yeah. I mean, the numbers don't lie. On penalty kill percentage, Carolina was 10th in the league this year. Vegas was actually 8th. They were slightly better on that. The Fenwick 4 percentage, Carolina led the league. That is not a surprise. They're sort of an analytics darling. And Vegas was 4th. So, yay, yeah. Analytics, if you're looking at that part of it, that these teams advanced here. You've got in shot percentage, Carolina 16th, Vegas 17th. Save percentage, again, this is where There's a lot of noise in the numbers with the regular season goaltending. Carolina 26th, Vegas also in a tie for 26th.
Well, to be fair, though, Carolina was using a different goalie, Brandon Bussey, and Carter Hart did not start the season off well, and I'm not sure he was good until Torts got there. So, there's that too.
That's the noise in the numbers right there. Goals scored, Carolina 2nd and Vegas 15th. Goals against, Carolina 8th, Vegas 12th.
Well, so I'm seeing the other noise there in my head is I see your Detroit at 17, and they're going to trade Sebastian Cosa. Like that, you could take that to the bank. He's getting traded. Are they gonna?
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, they've got him on the 15-year plan to reach the big leagues, so I can see that.
Somebody else will accelerate that greatly. Trust me.
By the way, credit here, and for anybody that I'm highlighting yet again for anybody looking at the video, but on the final metrics, they came out 17th, 18th on the FDH power rankings. So everybody out there can miss me with the bias from Rick Morris here. You know, I had them one slot lower than the numbers ended up putting them at. And that is a thing where ultimately in looking at this,
use your brain over your heart.
I try to do that as much as humanly possible. I try. And that is a thing where
you do until I talk about the Cavs, then you kind of have that bitter beer face on.
I you know, it's tough. It's absolutely tough. And I'm not going to deny that for a moment. I'm a man that's in some pain. I will say game three. Of the Eastern Conference Finals. So I was watching this. There's a friend of a friend who has an excellent. It is an absolutely amazing. It's like a sports bar in his basement. You would not believe this place. And so I'm down there. He's got screens all over the place. So when the game starts getting away, I'm trying to escape the screens. There's like arcade video games everywhere. I go in the next room to play an arcade video game. And the guy helpfully comes in like, oh, hey, let me turn the game on here for you. I'm like, oh, thank you. Thank you, Ted. But then like at the end of the night, I'm watching the end of I think it was Montreal and Carolina that were playing that night. And I'm sitting there on the couch. I'm just sitting there quietly watching. And he comes over and he goes, look at Rick. Rick is dealing with this so well. Look at how calm he is. And I said to him, you are making the understandable mistake of mistaking calm for being dead inside. I said, I feel dead inside right now. I mean, that's where I was in that moment. Like, I love my Cavs, damn it.
Hey, listen, I felt that way back when I cared about the Knicks when they lost to the Rockets, right? So
yeah,
I get it. But I will say this. You know, I do a FanDuel spot for Locked On Flyers. I picked the Knicks not because I grew up a fan, because the NBA doesn't really mean anything to me now. I just think they might win. But I will say this. I did see the 73 team. Obviously, I am old enough for that. I saw the 69 team. But for 73, I was 10. That was more in my wheelhouse. I think my dad took us to at least two games at the Garden that year. Best backcourt I've ever seen. I know there's arguments about it, but Earl Monroe, Earl the Pearl, I used to do the spin move in my yard on my basket, him and Clyde Frazier. Like, that was the engine of that team. Willis Reed was still there, but he wasn't the same Willis Reed. You know, he had the double knee thing going. And but still, it was tremendous. It's hard for me to sit here and say that this is the second time since then they've been to the finals, as they call it, which is nuts, right? I mean, I just don't even know what to say about that. So I'm happy for all Knicks fans that have hung in there. I did not hang in there, but I have other reasons why I didn't hang in there. It wasn't because I didn't love the Knicks. It was just because of other things.
Well, I have two notes about what you just said there. One is, as far as Willis Reed goes, this is the era, sadly, where you know, you had any kind of knee injury that required surgery or whatever, and stick a fork in you. Like, you're never going to be the
Gale
same.
Sayers.
I was just about to mention there's a football account that I follow on Twitter that puts up classic films and stuff. And I was just seeing it over the weekend, and I think it was his birthday, and I was watching Gale Sayers stuff. And it's like,
he could change direction. Like, no, nobody's business when he was okay. And then when he wasn't, he couldn't do that.
Yeah, I mean, he's sort of the biggest poster child for that. So these are guys who unfortunately couldn't come back from things that we might consider to be routine today. Bobby Orr as well, yes.
Joe Namath, my favorite.
Bobby Orr, who I've always proclaimed the greatest player in the history of the NHL, because
I don't believe it, but he's close
from
he's
the but doing it from the defense position.
Oh no, it's tremendous when you have a defenseman like that. It's a weapon, man.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's I've always proclaimed him numero uno. And again, for as much as I'm a wings guy and Gordie Howe and all that, for me
you
to
should
say
be a
Bobby
Dennis
Orr,
Marook guy. I don't know what's wrong with you.
Well, you know, I'm unbiased yet again on that. The other thing is too, you talked about the Knicks in the '90s. We covered this during the NBA Finals preview that I did with Ben Chu earlier. The 99 final gave rise to 95 finals, since it's the NBA, I guess, gave rise to the asinine theory propagated by Bill Simmons of the Ewing theory, that some teams are better without their dominant superstar player.
Had nothing to do. You know, don't get me started. I can tell you why it wasn't all on Ewing. I'm not going to. And I fully disagree with Bill Simmons, who is a Celtics fan, so I can't even listen.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And you wouldn't be hearing him doing the Ewing theory on Tatum if the Celtics went to the finals without him this year. He would that would somehow escape his attention.
Of course.
If that were the case.
So but, I don't even doesn't even matter.
Let's we've wasted enough oxygen on him. But as far as this final, it is a thing where, again, and I will say, and I guess since we're talking about some of these more sort of not exactly superfluous angles on things here, but as far as I'll just, you know, pose it as an interest or rooting kind of a thing. I wonder how many other people out there, like I will be unabashed in this that first of all, I will say, and I'll give credit to Torts, and I'm not a Torts guy, but you got to pick your poison. And Vegas was part of my spite firewall, which I sometimes have. I needed somebody to take out Carolina. And to my dear friend, Kate, who's probably listening to this, who's a Colorado native and fan. I'm sorry, Kate, but I'm a Wings fan. That's how I look at it. So I appreciate
it. Oh, yeah. So you don't really feel that bad for the Avs either.
I feel bad for her personally, but that's it. Anybody else? No, not at all. But it's a thing where, so Torts did that. But I'm rooting for Carolina in the final here because, again, I don't like him. And then the other thing is, too, talk to me about this. You're somebody that has covered the Flyers for a long time. It's a thing where I'm not I'm not going to say anything defamatory or anything like this, but there's a lot of people out there who feel like Carter Hart might have gotten away with something that for which a suspension would have been a slap on the wrist. And it's a thing where I just kind of look at it like I'm not sure this guy belongs back in the league kind of a thing. I'm not saying he did it.
I don't disagree. I mean, I am not going to disagree.
Okay. No. I thought you might have another angle on that, but okay.
I do not have another angle on it.
Okay.
But he is, so it doesn't really matter what we think.
Right, right. But as far as, you know, a story where, again, like, you know, Jack Eichel is fine with me. Like, there's guys on the Vegas team that are very likable that I could get behind, whatever. But the combination of the coach and the goalie is kind of making me go the other way here. But
I get it. I fully get that.
When you look at it, and again, the history of this, so Vegas, this is their third time in being in the finals since coming into the league in at the beginning of the 2017-2018 season. Of course, the first time was the first season when they lost in the final to Washington and then subsequently winning it a couple of years ago against Florida in 2023.
Yeah, I covered that, but I wasn't there for the clincher, but I was in Vegas. And I remember telling one of the bartenders, I'm like, dude, they're going to win this.
Yes.
Oh, I hope so. Like, they have some really big fans. They do.
You were there for the legendary game one, Jackie Redmond in the pink dress game.
Jackie that night? Probably. I don't remember, but okay.
And for Carolina, their third time of being in the final as well. You go back to 2006, and we'll talk about
which
that.
I was there.
Boy, there's so many echoes of 2006.
And I did cover that clincher, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, exactly 20 years later, there's so many echoes of it. But I would also say,
Also have to say this. There's echoes because Rob Brindamore, as a player or a coach, has been responsible for like 97, 98% of their playoff wins, something like that.
Well, and not only that as I was reminded in looking at this again about Jordan Staal being their captain. Oh, yeah. So his brother, he wasn't the captain in 06, but he was probably the best player on the team, I think, because that was like kind of a career.
Yeah, Rod was the captain.
Yeah, but Eric Staal sort of had a career year that year.
Eric Staal was the superstar.
I remember him being very central to what happened that year.
Oh, yeah.
And that, like, exactly 20 years later on this. And I would say, from a completely unbiased point of view, I feel that Rowley hosted the greatest Stanley Cup playoff final game of the 21st century. I refer, of course, to Game 3 of the 2002 Stanley Cup Final. That, what was it, triple overtime epic with Lyrianov and Dandonneau. I can still see Dandonneau jumping in my sleep sometimes.
I don't know if I agree with that, but it's up there.
It's up there. You got to admit it's way up there. So that was their first time in. They come back 4 years later. They make it happen. That was
They did that in the game 7 too.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was quite a quite a final.
That was Cam Ward, you know, he gets now I'm forgetting the original goalie, a European guy. But anyhow, Cam Ward took over the job and wins the Conn Smythe. I watched him carry the Conn Smythe into the locker room. I was among the first people in the locker room. So that was kind of cool. Martin Gerber was the original goalie.
Oh, I was thinking it was Arturs.
No, it wasn't Arturs Erbe. It was Martin Gerber.
Erbe was not there. Okay. No. One of the things that I remember about this 2006, watching one of the games with FDH Lounge dignitary John Adams, and there was a hurricane. So this was a very very antagonistic towards the rest of the world Hurricanes blog run by some woman who dubbed herself the Acid Queen. And I remember him going on, I think Edmonton might have won one of the games in overtime. I remember him going on and trolling on the blog about that. And then exactly 15 minutes later, he was banned from the blog for life. I have that memory in my head. That was quite a final. That one went back and forth.
It did.
That was, that one, I think, and that was, I remember that also too.
And by the way, that was when the Ric Flair woo was in the league. They brought it in the league that year. I interviewed Ric Flair about it, and now everybody copies it. Devils copy it. A bunch of teams copy it.
And not exactly a hot take to mention that, like, Rick sort of attaches himself to whatever team might be going for a championship in whatever sport. But, there is that angle on it as well. And, Carolina has – they've been trying to get back, you know, for this entire period of time. And
falling short until they didn't.
Yeah. And they've been right on the doorstep the last couple of years. They've been one of the teams that's been right in the mix the last few years. Really the same thing with Vegas. Vegas has always been in the mix, even in the years when they haven't made the final. And so if you were to say at any point in probably the last 3 or 4 years, it's going to be Carolina and Vegas at the end. You'd have a lot of people saying that's not necessarily the combo I would have picked, but I can totally see that. They're not coming out of nowhere. They're both established entities. They're both individuals.
This is the first time I picked Carolina to actually do it in those times. Cause you know what, they played the Rangers, like some of those other teams. I picked the other teams. Why'd I pick the other teams? Cause Freddie Anderson, but this year, Freddie Anderson has outkicked anything he's ever done.
Yes. I mean, and that's where, again, much like Cam Ward, they're hoping that this is going to be the kind of career year that basically
Cam was a rookie, but other than that, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that part of it is true. So the point of comparison only goes so far on that one.
Yeah.
But when you look at it and the way that the team was put together, really both teams, the biggest commonality that I would say is that they had both come up short the last couple of years, really Vegas ever since they'd won it all in 2023. And so they go out in the offseason and they make the move that everybody had rumored for such a long period of time. They get Mitch Marner, much like they did a couple of years ago with Eichel to be that.
But Eichel was a lot riskier. Like that was they took a risk.
Because of the neck situation, yes. But
the artificial disc in his neck, yeah.
But the same thing as far as like high end talent, because they're two. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's controversial at all to say they're the two most skilled players in the final.
No, I would put Svechnikov next, I think. But yeah, I think those two are, they're one and two in the scoring.
Yeah.
So no big surprise there. If you're a Toronto fan and you don't want to believe it, then don't watch the episode, but it's true.
Yeah, and the Toronto fans might be wanting to hide their eyes here.
They're doing worse than that. They're just flat out rooting against Mitch, hurling insults, whatever. And it's like, okay, but you know, he might win the Conn Smythe if this happens.
Well, in other words, Leafs fans are handling this with their usual amount of class and aplomb when adversity hits them. Well, I'll say that. But it really, Carolina, the same thing. And again, star power, just not quite on the level of a Mitch Marner, but you go out and you get Nick Ehlers in the offseason.
Yeah, Ehlers has been massive for him. Yep. Mm-hmm. You know, again, they've got Svechnikov, they've got Aho. Those are big guys.
Yes.
So they are a team effort. There's no question about it. And I think it's one of those situations where it's like that defense first. But guys like Seth Jarvis, you know, he's a 30-goal scorer every year. Mm-hmm. They do kick in. And Taylor Hall is kind of, you know, rounded back.
That's crazy. Like, Taylor Hall in 2026 is becoming a thing. Like, I did not have that on my 2026 bingo card, Russ.
It's a big thing. And so, I mean, they're a dangerous team. They'll outshoot you. They're going to outshoot Vegas. But, you know, and they'll be faster than Vegas.
Yeah.
You know, things slow down a little in the playoffs, but not so much with Carolina. But there are some things Vegas can do to cause real problems.
Is it going to be hugely, and by hugely, I'm going to say overwhelmingly determinative in these games who scores first? Because both teams, you don't think so? Okay.
No, I think
it has been when Carolina scored first. Let me tell you.
Okay. But the thing is, Vegas has done a good job of coming back in games. Dorofeyev has 10 goals, and he's a guy that scores dirty goals. Brett Howden has 10 goals, and he has also scored some clutch goals. Carlson's back, and he's been big for them, especially on defense, being a great defensive forward. So I think if you're trying to shut down Marner and Eichel, you'll be able to maybe shut down Marner, but you're not going to be able to shut down both of them. And they have a lot of supporting, I don't know, hurdles starting to wake up a little bit. You know, he was a little long in the tooth. Mark Stone's back in there. Now, again, how did I know the Montreal series was over? When Mark Stone got behind the defense. That's mm-hmm. when I knew it was over.
Yeah. Well,
because he's not fast.
No, that is absolutely the case. And when you look at it, it's one of these things where, and again, Stone is on a short list of players. When we're talking about Eichel and Marner, who's on the list, you know, not far behind that.
All around play and just being important to the team, he's up there, man.
Stone is definitely on that list. And so, it really is something where, in a way, this series, it'll be very, very interesting when it's done to see how it plays out, because FDH Lounge dignitary Ben Chu and I, on air and off air over the years, in talking about essentially like regression to the mean, progression to the mean, the notion that like you only have a finite amount of production within the course of a year. I mean, a team like Vegas, you could look at it as sort of like a classic rope-a-dope kind of a situation of like, how much of their year's production did they use up in the 82 games? And how much of that has to do with what we're seeing from them now? Obviously, it's the change in direction with a new coach and all of these things here as well. But I'm almost wondering, and that's a thing where it doesn't happen very often, because like I will say, it is kind of night and day when I put up the similar numbers for the NBA finals. We're looking at it and it's like, we can pretty much discern completely by looking at these numbers. They apply almost completely to what we're going to see in the finals, versus here, like you said, we're having to sort out the noise and the numbers, and we're having to sort of interpret things and everything like that. And it's like, I almost wonder sometimes in hockey, like, if you can make it to the final in a year in which you have clearly had a down season, but you made it this far anyways, like, I'm just in terms of the bounce of the puck and all of those things like that, I wonder if there's not more of that that goes your way in the end, those things that didn't happen during the season. It'll be very interesting to look back on this series.
Well, the only thing I can say is, because you brought up basketball earlier, like the 69 Knicks were the underdog the whole way. And you would have come up, Rick Morris would have come up on the stats back then, and you would have been like, there's no way the Knicks are winning. Mm-hmm. Like, you would have looked at stats and say, they can't do this.
Sure.
This is where they're going to hit the brick wall in the finals. And they didn't. So like, sometimes the stats can lead you a certain way, and sometimes it still will go a different way.
Well, and I would say also too, with your general metro area, that this might be a sore spot here, but Yeah, the 77 Blazers had Bill Walton, but mm-hmm. I mean, you look at the rest of that roster.
Was it Lionel Hollins? They had a good team, man.
It was a good team, but it was like, I remember. I don't know how well it necessarily stood up to what Philadelphia had on paper. So it's a thing where you never know until you make it there, really.
Yeah, I mean, a healthy Bill Walton always meant a lot.
And I think like their regular season record wasn't necessarily overwhelming either. So I'd have to look that up and see. But yeah, like this is the thing with Vegas of like they might be a classic rope-a-dope theory team of where nothing really went their way, but everything's going their way at this point in time. And
I think it just caught fire at the right time, honestly.
Yeah, and it just – To an extent, they were going to be due to do that. And that's the thing where, again, making a coaching change
But like if they didn't change the coach, they wouldn't have, right? So I think that's –
probably not. No, they needed to do something.
They were dead in the water. I think they
needed to change it up. And it is kind of hilarious that, you know, when you look at this, the era of Vegas hockey and championship appearances, yeah, it's an era that has three separate head coaches in the finals over the period of time here. So
all they did was change blackjack dealers. That's all.
Essentially, yes. It's the end of the shift. Time to tip the dealer. And yeah, and move on. What a classic Vegas.
From working in Atlantic City, because I did work in Atlantic City, the way they always did it was – they do that with their hands and they walk away.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's pretty much what happened with Cassidy. So
it kind of is. And the way that they have come out and the way that they have responded. And again, from looking at this, from seeing what some of the expert chatter has been about the final and the prediction that are out there. And it seems to be the same way that a lot of the wise guys are looking at it too, that, and when you get into the metrics of it as well, a lot of things seem to be pointing to Carolina to finish up this run.
Part of it again is that
cause I think this is the best, I think conference record in like 40 plus years as far, but again, I
wiped the slate clean. Like,
I think it starts from zero. I'm also looking at the path they took, and I'm looking at it like,
Vegas had an easy path.
Vegas was harder than Carolina's, though. I mean, I guess,
but it was still easier than a lot of teams, too. So they didn't have a hard path either.
Well, these are the teams that came out of the two weakest divisions, which, like I said, I think kind of buttresses my argument for why you don't want to see the playoffs the way that you do. But, you know, we're stuck with this thing here. But so I'm just saying that, like, Carolina only losing twice in the Eastern Conference playoffs.
That's a big deal.
How many times would we have expected them to lose? Three, maybe four. What they did to Montreal, I find impressive. What they did in the first two rounds, I'm like, congratulations for doing what you were supposed to do. Here's your participation.
Well, that's fair, but I think Rob Brindamore would say the same thing.
Probably, yeah. He's pretty straightforward about things here. So I'm saying all that to say this, that if you're looking at it, that
you've said a lot just to say this. I want to hear this.
Just to say this. That there's so much, if you're going for the logic of this, I guess the logic all seems to point to, if you listen to the experts and the analysts, to Carolina to finish the job. And there's a large part of me, whenever there's like a team of destiny thing here, the 20 years and all the historical markers.
So you're saying finish the job like Luke Skywalker against Darth Vader? Like that, is that what you mean?
Exactly, yeah. Okay. So like I can almost buy into it, but I mean, I'm just looking at what Vegas is doing, and it's just like Vegas to me looks like a team that's going to finish it. Like they made this U-turn here right before the playoffs started, and like I said, played with their food in the first two rounds. I'm not impressed with how they played in the first two rounds. And again, there are asterisks to be put on what they did to Colorado. We have discussed that. But just overall, how they're playing – The fact that they have the two best players in the series, I'm going to say Vegas in six, because I think they'd have to finish it on their ice if they're going to. I'll say Marner for Conn Smythe, just because that will make so many heads explode up north. And that's how I see it playing out. Like I said, a lot of the logic, and that was all that to say this, it all seems to point to Carolina if you ask around. But I just have this feeling.
Rick? Who are you asking around? You're acting like you're walking around the condo and asking around. Who are you asking?
Well, I was reading a lot of the NHL.com commentary on this. They had a lot of their picks up there and different websites. I think ESPN was starting to run through. And good old Greg W. had a big breakdown as to why Carolina was the heavy favorite in this thing here.
And they are the heavy favorite. Greg's right.
Would you say heavy? I mean, I would have thought more moderate, but would you actually say
heavy?
I think it's heavy.
Okay.
I guess I'm really going against the grain then. Vegas and six, Marner for Conn Smythe.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you this first before I give my pick. Probably middle of the season, I was, you know, chatting with people who sit around me at the Flyers games and other people in the press, and I said, I'm going to tell you something. The East has dominated this whole entire season versus the West, and they did. And just because hockey's the way it is, somebody in the West is probably going to win it. Like, that's just what hockey does sometimes. And sure. But now I said that thinking it was going to be the Avalanche, right? But Vegas has kind of like done everything they're supposed to do. And Torts is not overcoaching, like he even said, which sometimes can get him in trouble. And so I feel like the same as you, Vegas and six. I'm going to go Jack Eichel as the Conn Smythe, because I think that they might try and shut down Marner. And if they do, I think Eichel will take it upon himself to kind of make it happen. But it could still be Dorofeyev, who's got 10 goals, too. If he ends up with like 15 goals, it's going to be hard not to give it to him. So, but I think it's going to go like that. Because Carter Hart, I looked, he was like fourth in save percentage, and he's not even up there in goals again. So I don't think, unless they sweep, I don't think he's going to get it. But I think Carolina will be sort of heavy favorites because of all the reasons you said, the record, Brendan Moore, this is their time. They've built towards this. But in the end, they could be the Buffalo Bills.
They could be. They very well could be. And this is a thing where, again, for Eichel, if they win, whether or not he takes the Conn Smythe, I believe he would join Ken Morrow, 1980, Miracle on Ice team, USA gold medalist in the same year as lifting the Stanley Cup. So that's got to be a huge motivating factor. Now, I asked you this
a lot of motivating factors, but I'm sure it's in there.
Yeah, it's a unique place in history. And if he's able to do something like this, and I asked you this question a couple of years ago when they won the cup in 2023, right. Eichel famously second in the draft that year behind McDavid.
Right.
Like, if he lifts another one and he's a USA gold medalist, is it a Marino Montana situation?
No.
One guy's got the numbers. One guy's got the glory.
No. McDavid's still a level above him. I mean, Eichel's top five, top 10, but McDavid is literally on his own plateau right now. And sometimes those guys don't win a cup right away. Sometimes they have to leave to win a cup. Like, it happens. And I think that's what may end up happening. But if you're going to try and say that, like, if someone's going to look and say, well, McDavid should have won a cup in Edmonton, it's like, hockey's hard to win a cup by, you know, without other help. And he has some help. Don't get me wrong. He's got Draisaitl, but he hasn't had a good defense. He hasn't had a good goalie in years. And so, like, McDavid's McDavid. He's on his own level.
It's a top-heavy roster. And you've had over the years, Nugent Hopkins and Bouchard, and you've had some other prime pieces. But, yeah, that's and I will say, too, just to tease towards the end of June here when we have up Pro Hockey Draftology 2026.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll be going to the combine this up next week. I'm there in Buffalo again.
There you go.
And then I'll be at the draft in Buffalo again.
Well, and I had a column in there last year, and I'll be updating it for this year and thereafter the final, that we are in sort of an unprecedented moment in hockey history because there's never been anybody as great as McDavid that never won a cup. Arguably, Draisaitl also. And you go down the list here, too. That like the
Marcel Dion's one of the great guys to never win a cup. He's pretty high up there.
Well, McDavid's probably ahead of him. Draisaitl might not be.
Draisaitl's ahead of him, too, I think, but not by a lot.
Probably. You start to drop down a little bit, but Kaprizov is another guy where it's like, when's he? So it's starting to get a little bit jarring, this generation.
I mean, it happens. It's happened in baseball. Like, you know, Barry Bonds never won a title. I mean, it happens.
Yeah.
Ernie Banks never won a title. I mean, it happens.
True, just not in hockey as much. So that's what makes it interesting to see.
Well, I don't know how Artie Banks was in hockey. No, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, the progression going forward the next couple of years.
Tom Glavine was good at hockey. I know that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's a lot that have been great in hockey. And
not as good as Kirk McCaskill. Look him up.
No.
Kirk McCaskill was really, really good. I mean, he's a good pitcher. But in the AHL, I think he had a 25-goal season or something. He was pretty
really?
Good.
Okay.
Yeah, he played for the for the Jets. I'll pull it up while you're doing this.
So he was sort of like a Timu Jim Thorpe is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. I can ride with that. So that is
He played for the Sherbrooke Jets. Oh, he had 10 goals. He had 22 points in 78 games. Not bad.
Okay.
He did have a 50-point year, though, at the University of Vermont as a hockey player. Like, that's back then, 51 points in 32 games was
– That's pretty good, man. It's pretty good. Wheel snipe Selly. That's pretty good. So,
but he was a better pitcher.
Yeah. Well, that there's guys.
I mean, you may not feel that way because, you know, he beat the American League teams, but.
Well, no, I wouldn't necessarily disagree with that. He had his moments. I think we would probably put it that way. So,
and I may be coming your way to, if I'll let you know if I do, to Jacobs Field in August. We'll see.
Oh, interesting. Well, as I celebrate in the month of August, becoming the second longest prez of this here association where I live, maybe we can co-celebrate the occasion here. So that will be something to look forward to. So
I'll bring Shador Sanders. We'll have a good time.
Yeah, well, we'll have him bring
if
one of his.
He still has a job by then.
If he can't beat the massage guy for the starting job, he is truly hopeless.
I mean, he's down on the depth chart. I mean, they're down on him.
Yeah. Well, Todd Monken, quarterback genius, ladies and gentlemen. He's about to elevate Deshaun Watson to the number one spot.
No, I don't know if he's doing that. We'll see about that.
Well, I mean, as of right now, that would appear to be the case.
Okay.
So
without
Yeah, so thankfully the Browns have deadened that part of me that gives a crap about what they do in recent years. So, but unfortunately, my 1A team is the Dolphins, who are in for a rough couple of years, much like your Jets.
Oh, we're both, listen, the Dolphins and Jets, I mean, again, it goes back to when I was like 9 and 10 years old,
yeah,
when they were really good Dolphins. Obviously, I watched their immaculate season, you know, their undefeated season.
That's
but,
right. Perfect team. Perfect
but a guy
team.
From my high school, Ray Langford, played on the Marino Super Bowl team that lost. He
really?
Actually, yeah, he, yeah. So he was from Farmington High School. But again, I was no Dan Marino fan. I wouldn't even serve him in a restaurant. He came in. I told one of my servers, go serve Dan Marino and don't screw it up because I don't want to talk to him. So, you know,
well,
there you go.
Combined number of wins between our teams this year, I'm putting at 7. You guys will get the quarterback you want next year.
We're not getting 7 wins. The Jets are not getting 7
no,
wins.
No, combined. You're going to get 3. We're going to get 4.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay. That's thankfully, I don't think the Dolphins will be in the quarterback sweepstakes next year. I believe Malik Willis is the guy. I am overjoyed they went out and got him in the offseason. But what he's going to have to work with is approximately squat. So yeah. It's going to be a tough period of time. But it's going to be a great period of time watching.
Wait, it's not Ray Langford. Oh no, this says Ryan. Sorry, go ahead, keep talking.
I was gonna say Ray Langford is a name I know as like a guy who I was never able to get on one of my fantasy baseball teams, but always wanted to. So I remember thinking there when you were saying that he had a namesake that played for the Dolphins. I didn't remember that being the case.
Well, I mean, actually, so 2 Farmingdale High School players played for the Dolphins. Ron Heller was one that I knew, and he played for the Eagles, and I think he was also there with the Dolphins with Marino.
Okay. But,
yeah, Paul Langford, sorry.
Paul Langford, okay.
Paul All Langford, right. Yeah, he was a Farmingdale High School guy, so I remember him.
Okay.
He was there when my brother was there.
Okay.
My brother's older, so yeah.
Okay.
So a couple guys and one Dolphin. And well, actually, no, 2 because Ron Heller. So, but the Dolphins, yeah, I don't know, man. I think their coach stinks. That's all.
Well, you're already down on him? He hasn't coached a game
well,
yet.
Well, your former coach stinks. Sorry.
Oh, Now, I don't believe that. I honestly don't believe that. I think he's an offensive genius. I think he's going to go somewhere and really turn it around. And to be honest with you, the Chargers are sort of my early AFC favorite at this point, in large part because of what he's going to do with the offense this year. So I part company with you on Mike McDaniel. I think
Mike McDaniel's a weirdo, man. I don't think he's any good.
He's got the beautiful mind, though, Russ Cohen. He does.
Does he really? I don't know.
Yeah. He's the man really knows his football. He was handy. Chris Greer's like the worst general manager this side of anybody the Browns have ever.
I mean, everybody told me Adam Gase was this offensive genius. Was he? No. He was another bad coach. And I think he just got a job recently, but hasn't had one for a while.
Who ever said Adam Gase was a genius? Everybody knew that he got his job based purely on the fact that he was able to put the right amount of cinnamon in Peyton Manning's cappuccino in Denver.
Yeah,
that was the extent of the responsibilities.
Peyton Manning lied to the Jets and said how good he was, and everybody believed it. So
these are the grudges that you hang on to, right? Because, like, I can tell
Peyton
you
Manning. Yeah, that's a big grudge, because there's no question the Jets beat him 30-0 in the playoffs. There's no question that was his revenge on the Jets. No question about it. Helping a buddy out.
I can tell you, as a guy that is a University of Tennessee fan, that while I do revere Bruce Pearl for the amount of good that he did at the basketball program back in the day, Bruce Pearl is still on my shiznit list for what he did in 2019, selling the Cavs on, what you got to do is you got to take this Isaac Okoro. Isaac Okoro is the guy you need.
And that's what I'm saying. People do that when they do it to your team and they give you the wrong information, you get mad.
Russ, at the time I was like, no, don't do it. Don't do it. Lo and behold, Isaac Okoro never came close to living up to the billing of fifth pick in the draft. So I feel your pain. I've been there. Having people vouch for somebody who ends up being a stiff is not fun.
No.
But segue alert, it will be fun to watch this year's Stanley Cup playoffs, the final that is coming up here, Vegas and Carolina. And we'll see how these games materialize. And I will look forward to hitting the postmortem with you once the series concludes. So, a pleasure as always, Russ Cohen. Thank you so much for being here, my friend. And thank you all for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1928.